Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, Mike Brennan, anyway. Matt, unfortunately, is out for a couple of segments because his boss wanted him to actually earn some money, and I couldn't say no to that, right? So, welcome to M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Station Network. What do we call this, by the way,
Jessica? Network.
Network? All right, let's call it that. And we have with us, calling in from, I believe, Holland, Michigan, we have Paul Rutherford, who is the CEO of EOSTAR. How you doing, Paul?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Not bad. Can't complain. Lovely day over here. Finally got above freezing. I'm happy with that. So, but we know about West Michigan. I grew up in the Grand Rapids area, so you probably got 2 feet of snow on the ground over there, right?
Not just yet. No, but we did finally get a break in the cloud cover today, so I wasn't too sure if the sun was going to get out of my eyeballs before we got on this call. So it's the time of day. It shines right through.
All right, great. Well, I was talking to some folks from Airfoil Public Relations just so that I could clearly understand what EOSTAR does. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it? What does EOSTAR's software do?
Sure. So, and actually, the company name is Rutherford & Associates, and then the product that we have is EOSTAR. So EOSTAR is a route accounting software, and we work primarily with wholesale distributors in the beverage industry. So it's really geared around providing solutions for wholesale distributors that send a sales team out to an account, say a grocery store, a convenience store, a restaurant, place orders at that account, and then subsequently make that delivery and do all the reconciliation that it takes to go along with that and the reporting that they need and integrations with the retailers, integrations with suppliers, those types of things.
Who are some of the distributors that you're working with? And I don't know if you've got prohibitions on being able to name them, but those that you can, who are they, for instance?
Yeah, we have some of the largest beer distributors in the market. So Manhattan Beer in New York is about a 50 million case distributor, and they're probably second or third largest in the country, and they're a user of our software. Here in the Michigan area, we have Alliance Beverage over in the Grand Rapids area, and they actually cover statewide with the wine and everything that they sell. And then on the east side of the state, we actually have Eastdown Distributing that would be closer to where you guys are.
And I assume then, since you mentioned a New York outfit, that you've got customers around the country, or at least the Great Lakes, or what?
We do. And I'm not sure what the actual count is, but we have customers in most states at this point, including Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah, very impressive.
Thank you.
Yes, much bigger operation than I thought. So that must mean you've got a gazillion people working for you, right?
So we started out pretty small. My brother actually started the company back in 1986, so we've been around for a while. And we've been in the West Michigan area here since the early 90s. We moved up to Holland. We have our own building here. And we grew from when I joined the company in 95, I think we had about 6 employees, and we have a little over 60 employees now.
Huh.
So despite the number of customers that we have and the size of the customers that we have, you know, we're able to do it with a somewhat lean team. And broken down between, you know, a group of developers that actually create the application, implementation team to go out there and put it in place, and then a support team to just really take care of our customers.
Nice segue for the next question then. So since you've been doing this for 30 years, what about the changes in technology? How has your software changed over the years?
Oh, it's evolved a ton over the years. You know, I think when my brother first started writing the application, and at the time, you know, again, he was a sole proprietorship, and you know, the original version was probably written in BASIC. Then it evolved to things like COBOL, then C, then C++, and now the latest iteration that we have, which was a full rewrite that we did back in 2001. That's all written in C#. Uses a SQL database and got away from the proprietary database that we had before, and really leveraged the .NET architecture, which allows us to kind of work well with others, right? Integration between different applications.
Now, I used to use a SQL website and had some issues. I'm sure that those issues have been solved these days, right? A little better than it used to be?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. for us, when we went through that rewrite back in 2001, I mean, the turning point there was SQL Server 2000, because prior to that, I think it was SQL Server 7. And it really wasn't the right database, we felt, at that time for prime time. But it's really been a great move for us since we got away from our own database that we had written and leveraged more, you know, the SQL database. It's an open architecture. It's easy to maintain. Our customers like it because they're able to even tie in some things themselves through stored procedures. And, you know, it just kind of makes the access to information a lot easier than what it used to be.
Okay. Well, you recently launched an e-guide touting how businesses can leverage technology to, well, modernize the technologies in their businesses. So why is this important for businesses to, you know, get out there and get ahead of technology rather than fall behind?
Yeah, and I can speak, I mean, specifically for the beverage market, because that's, again, where most of our customers are at this point. It's a pretty fast-changing market in the industry. You have a lot of acquisition going on. A lot of distributors are pulling together, you know, to grow by territory. But then on top of that, and I think we hit this market, you know, our first beer customer was in 2004. And if you look back, I mean, that's really when you started getting into a lot more of the craft beers and things like that. So, you know, the big buzzword in the industry is SKU proliferation, right? SKU proliferation. So as you have evolved from a typical beer distributor used to have, you know, 350 to 400 SKUs that they were trying to manage within the warehouse, to now a typical beer distributor has, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 with all the different craft beers and things. Sometimes you almost feel like they have that many IPAs only, right?
Yeah.
But as the data got bigger and people started competing differently, so with the craft beers and things like that, you had a lot less brand loyalty that went on. So it used to be sort of the classic, you know, customers were typically either a Miller or a Coors customer, or they were an Anheuser-Busch customer, and there was a lot of brand loyalty that went on there. As these craft beers started hitting the market, now it became a lot more competitive in terms of having the right SKU mix and the right accounts to say, let's keep our sales where they need to be and let's drive it forward. So as you want to take your business to the next level, it becomes important for that visibility of the information, right? So that they've got to make sure that the sales team that's out in the field, and that's, you know, that's another side of it too, is a lot more mobile sales forces and delivery forces. A lot of people are working outside the four walls of the office now. So keeping them connected, keeping them informed, and making sure that they have access to all the correct pricing and promotion and sales history information so that they can make better decisions out in the field. That's very important for a distribution company to maintain their competitive level. And then the other side of the business, obviously, is driving operational efficiencies and reducing errors, managing their inventory better so that they're not carrying too much inventory but not carrying too little inventory. Because either one is bad. You know, you carry too much inventory, you get your capital tied up in that. If you carry too little inventory, you'll end up without a stocks, and that's missed sales opportunities. So those are kind of the key reasons why I think, you know, businesses should take a look at and investing in technology that helps them run their organizations better.
Well, certainly we're going to have that information on my website, how you can download your e-guide. But for those that are listening, how else can they do it?
To download the e-guide, or
yeah, right. How do they get to that? Oh. Is it on your website, or how do they find?
Yeah, we have a link to that on our website. And our website is www.eostar.com. And within there, it's got a little background on what we do as an organization, what our application does, and you know, points out the different pieces of functionality that we have around mobile sales, warehouse management, voice picking, and the e-guide would be available there. As in addition to, you know, being able to contact us through there if you have any questions at all.
Yeah, getting back to your point on beers, I was in Meijer's yesterday buying some beer, and it's like two aisles of a whole bunch of beers I'd never heard of before. And so that's part of what you do, right, is all these exotic kind of craft beers and stuff. I don't know if Meijer's one of your customers or not, but that's what your software handles, right? I'm trying to get it so people really totally understand what you're doing.
Yeah, so what? You know, when you look at a Meijer or you look at another retailer, you're right. They have that big shelf of different beers and things like that. So who we work with is actually the wholesale distributors that come in and sell that beer to Meijer and help them determine what's the right mix of products, what kind of SKUs sell well in this area. So, you know, how do you want to best spend your shelf space that you have available here? Which products should we put in place? Which types of packages? And, they do things like they'll build displays within the store. So when you walk into the front side of a store, a lot of times you'll have a big display there of Miller Lite or something like that. And as, they have different teams of people that will come in. So you might have a salesperson that comes in and sells sort of the regular brands of beer, but then you have salespeople that are focused on those craft beers because the craft beer market now is getting more and more like wine. And that you have different food pairings and those kinds of things that are interesting to people. So a lot of a wholesaler's job, a distributor's job, is to educate the retailers. And again, what we do is we enable them to understand what product is available in the warehouse that could be delivered to the store. What are the pricing and promotions that take place so that the store understands what the cost is going to be them. And then giving them background information on the different products and things like that so that they can better understand which products they should be carrying in their store.
So essentially you're doing logistical support. Now, does this software carry over to other industries? Could you do it outside of the beverage industry if you wanted, or do you do that now?
Yeah, we do that now. I would say, almost all of our customers are either beer distributors or Coke bottlers. We have a lot of people in the soft drink industry too, but we do have some other types of customers. I mean, we have a pizza distributor, distributes frozen pizzas. We have a bakery. We have an adhesives company. We have a coffee distributor. So the software, when we designed it, we had a couple of key goals in mind. We wanted to make it obviously very powerful, but we wanted to make it easy to use, and we wanted to make sure that people had access to the information. So the other design aspect is that we wanted to make sure that it was extensible into the other markets. So all these other markets, bakeries, dairies, people like that, the basic premise behind how they do business, they send a pre-seller to the store. They take account of what's on the shelf. They might write off some product that's out of date, pick up products, do those types of things, and then sell a new product. And then they have a delivery driver that comes in after that and sells, fills the shelves and does those types of things. The basic premise is the same between those different markets. And it comes down to just, what's the nuance? Obviously, when you're working with beer distributors and alcohol distributors, you have a lot of the nuance of, they'll have territories where they can sell certain brands, but not others. They'll have things like liquor licenses and things like that to take care of. So the nuance within each market is where, and this is really kind of, what we enjoy is figuring out what that nuance is and coming up with the solutions to problems. Our business is really forming that relationship with our customers and trying to come up with solutions that make their lives better and the people within their organization's lives better. So, if you look at a distribution company, the number one asset that they have is the people that are there. And an investment in technology like this is an investment in your people.
Got about a minute left, so why don't you tell us, what's the hot beverage for the holiday season? Beer, wine, what's really moving off the shelves?
Well, yeah, wine and spirits is always big in the holiday season, but I'm more of a beer guy myself. I don't drink a lot of wine or spirits. I get into a lot of the seasonals and things like that. I mean, we're coming out of the pumpkin spice whatnot, where everything it seems like is pumpkin spice.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea. But go ahead.
Sorry. For me this time of year, I like to get into the stouts and porters, something a little heavier, something that, especially living up in the Midwest here where it gets really cold, it's nice to just kind of snuggle up next to the fire and, sip down a nice porter.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it with that porter then. This is Paul Rutherford, who actually, now we got to get this right, is president of Rutherford and Associates, right?
That's right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but you do the EOSTAR software. We have to separate there.
That's right. Yeah,
okay,
EOSTAR
one more time.
Software.
Give me that website address one more time.
Will do. It's www.eostar.com.
Okay, this is Mike Brennan. You've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
And we're back. Mike Brennan with M Squared TechCast. Matt is outright for this segment anyway. He's doing something with LTU, just told me this morning. So you're stuck with me, but I think we can get through this. And we have calling in Kathleen Norton-Schock, the diva of the Michigan technology world. I think that's correct, right, Kathleen?
Oh, Mike, that's so sweet. I think I'm in great company, though. We have quite a few divas, as you probably know.
Yes.
I think you know them all.
Yes, after 25 years, they know me, whether they like it or not, right? So, but I guess
we're here to do the Women in Tech segment of your show, and we really appreciate the opportunity. As usual, if you don't mind, I am going to get started with the diva part. As you know, along with Nicole Scheffler, I'm the co-founder of Diva Tech Talk. And we do many, many podcasts focusing on women in tech to inspire other women and girls to join and be retained in the field. And most of our podcasts can be found at www.divatechtalk.com. And yesterday, Mike, I don't know if you know this. I think you do now because I tagged you on a few posts. We were celebrating Women's Entrepreneurship Day, which is a national holiday. It happens to take place on the 19th of November for the last few years. And I don't know if you know this, but one of the most interesting statistics I just realized is that 40% of what are now considered categorized as entrepreneurial startups and businesses here in the U.S. are founded by women. And by the way, that is the highest percentage since 1966. So it's an interesting phenomenon and, of course, a wonderful thing for those of us who support women and women leaders as you do. So in any case, yesterday we republished 10 of our podcasts. We have quite a few more than that, but we republished 10 leaders in various spots, all the way from Monica Wheat, the founder of Digerati Girls, to Jane Sidlowski, the founder of AMI Strategies, a 25-year-old software company founded by a woman here in the Midwest.
At her kitchen table.
Natalia Petrusic, who I think you know, Laura Bialor, Tara Reid, Jillian Nguyen, Cindy Warner. I mean, it was just an amazing day. Every hour we were republishing and citing some of the statistics. Cindy Warner alone is a story I always point people to because she is chairman of the board now, having moved off to work for another tech vendor. But she's chairman of the board of a really interesting company called the 360 of Me. That is a new CEO. And they're doing amazing things with the democratization of our own data. So in any case, Nicole and I were really excited. We spent the whole day revisiting some of these great stories and getting them out to the public. And the other reason we're excited is that we had a couple of upcoming podcasts I wanted to mention. One of them is another entrepreneur. There's a woman by the name of Elena Lipson, who we just podcasted and will be publishing a week from this coming Wednesday. Elena started a company called Mosaic Growth Partners, but she spent 10 years at Deloitte doing healthcare consulting and decided she could do a better job. So she literally moved off, having worked a little while for AARP, and decided to put those two experiences together and is doing a consulting company focused on healthcare IT, specifically for the baby boomer generation. So I'm very personally grateful to her. So that's our next podcast coming up on Diva Tech Talk, which would be a week from this coming Wednesday. And then 2 weeks after that, we'll be doing a podcast that I recorded with Mamsa Chamarthy, who is Senior Vice President of ZF. And Mamsa is a fascinating person. I know her for over 15 years now. And she and ZF are moving very rapidly into the whole area. Well, they have been for quite a while. But she's responsible for the digitalization of this global company. and taking the company through all five stages to the point where they'll have zero emissions and zero accidents in cars. So really exciting stuff. So again, people can find those podcasts at divatechtalk.com. And so then if you don't mind, I'm going to segue over because we do have a guest today. So first I wanted to talk about our favorite philanthropy, Mike, yours and mine, the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. There are three major things. First of all, I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you do because you know a lot of things. The nonprofit world for the last 6 years has had a holiday, if you will, called Giving Tuesday, mm-hmm. which takes place on the Tuesday after Cyber Monday and after Black Friday. And essentially, the point of Giving Tuesday is that if you have a nonprofit you love and you want to get your tax break before the end of the year, that particular Tuesday, which this year would be November 28th, is Giving Tuesday. Well, this is the very first year that MCWT will have a very formal campaign for Giving Tuesday, and we're going to do something called 20 for Tech. So anybody who wants to just contribute $20 can go to our website at www.mcwt.org, and every single penny, quarter, dollar, dime will be matched by NITS, who is one of our many, many sponsors. So that's kind of exciting. We have that coming up really quickly. And then the last time you and I spoke, the gala was just about to take place and you couldn't make it this year. And we did miss you. But we raised $384,000 for girls and women's programs, scholarships, our Camp Infinity, a bunch of other things. And of that amount of money, $52,000 was pledged personally on the site of the event. People raising their paddles saying, we want to support women in tech. And then finally, the other comment I want to make about that is that Allison Gleason, who is Senior Vice President of the Americas for Cisco, who is the founder of the internal Cisco organization that supports women, and she founded it 20 years ago and has helped grow it all the way along in her volunteer time as she runs a huge organization for Cisco. She got our Women of the Year in Technology Award. So that was all pretty exciting. So the other reason I wanted to segue real quickly is we have the upcoming, and we talked about this the last time, middle school and high school website contest coming up, the finals. And the mistress of ceremonies for that particular event is also one of the founders of MCWT, and she happens to be our guest today. Her name is Rosemary Bayer. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should also tell you that Rosemary and I, who were good friends for a long time, founded a company together. She is the major brains behind it. It is called Ardent Cause, and I think you know a lot about it, Mike.
I do.
We do software for software and technical consulting for the nonprofit world. But above and beyond that, Rosemary, who has indefatigable energy, is also embarking on another new mission. And Rosemary is going to talk to us about that. So hi, Rosemary. How are you doing?
Hi, Kathleen. Great. Thank you.
Good, good. So I'm going to make the announcement. I think a lot of people know, but I'm going to make the announcement on the show.
It's not
in addition
a secret.
To everything else Rosemary has done, she is now running for public office. She's going to be running for state senator in the state of Michigan for District 12. And she's a technologist from a long time back. So we did want to talk about. My key question for you, Rosemary, is how does your background as a patent holder, an engineer, an entrepreneur, and a technologist, how do you think that's going to make you a better public servant, particularly for our region?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks. And, you know, of course, from my perspective and yours, having a technology background makes you better at everything, right? So, you know, as Kathleen, you remember, of course, with our work at Ardent Cause, we work with social service agencies who generally get their funding from the state of Michigan. And so the first thing I'll mention briefly is that process of how they work with the state and the systems that they have to work with that come from state government are, well, probably the nicest thing I can say is opportunities for improvement. There are lots of ways to apply technology to sometimes very old government systems. And so just to have someone there who is familiar with that sort of thing is going to make new opportunities available, right, for improvement in that system. But really, probably more important than that for me, my heart and soul are in education. And so, of course, you know, to look at education and think about technology at the same time seems unnatural for us in this day and age. And there's a couple of ways specifically to think about it from the government side of the world, right? So first, I would say about education in technology, right? So we know that we have a surfeit of openings in jobs here for technologists, and we don't have people. And we have people who are looking for jobs who don't have technology. And there's so many great new programs out there that can help bring skills in technology quickly to people who need jobs. And so our public system should leverage that. We're never going to be able to keep up from a public perspective. And so we should leverage those things and tie it into our public education. And we should use technology as a government to make sure that people have access to real, true information. So it's hard for people to separate what's real and what's false. And so if we maybe fund it through libraries, talking to Matt Rausch, libraries could be the curators of that and a mechanism for using technology to get short bursts of information to people that they could trust.
Yeah, in the full disclosure department, I did meet with Rosemary this morning about her campaign. Yeah.
He just slid into the studio. So
Rosemary, I mean, this is the kind of thing that the state could really use some help with. I think if you look at the unemployment insurance computer system fiasco most recently, for instance.
Yeah. There's a lot of fiascos.
And the problem with early childhood funding. I mean, there's a lot of different systems that are just way out of date.
Okay, so that's great. Those are great overarching goals. Also, of course, let's face it, this is the women's segment on the show, right? It's the monthly. These guys are wonderful. They all give an audience to a lot of women leaders, but they also always do a monthly Women in Tech segment. And I would presume, Rosemary, there aren't that many women state senators right now. You would be one of the few. I know there are quite a few running, but we don't have enough representation for women's interests. So you'd be representing as well, I'm going to presume.
Now there are only four women in the Senate for the whole state.
Wow.
And three of those four are not even, they're term limited out, so they can't run again. So, I mean, we could be facing just, disastrous results for half of the population. And you can tell by the way things have been going lately, that it really matters to not have women there.
Got it.
Yeah.
So I'm real practical. You know me a long time. You're a technologist. Are you going to be using tech a lot practically from a pragmatic perspective in your campaign? And if so, how?
Of course we will. You know that. This is a huge piece of our advantage in being able to craft a message and then hand it off to the, seven or eight different people that we have that are managing different social media, right? The website, the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat and Reddit, and I mean, all these different pieces, and they're targeted different types of people or different groups of people tend to use them. And so I have people who were Girl Scouts of mine way back when who are now actually posting for Instagram and Reddit for us because that's the right audience for them. So we're going to take every advantage that we can out of, here's an important thing to say, and we need to figure out how to reach all the different people in different ways that make sense for them. And that's how we're going to take advantage of that in this campaign.
Okay, Kathleen, we've run out of time now. So let's have a final bit of information on your contact information and also Rosemary for you.
Well, divatechtalk.com, mcwt.org, and Rosemary, what's the website for your campaign?
The website for the campaign is rosemarybayer.com, and that's Rosemary Bayer, like the aspirin, BAYER.com.
All right. Thanks very much. Fantastic. It's Rosemary Bayer, a candidate for state senate and a veteran technologist here in the Detroit area, and our monthly visit with Kathleen Norton-Schock on women in technology and all the various ways that they are continuing to make inroads in that field. So thank you very much, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
And this is our monthly segment for Tech 248, which is the Oakland County. Well, we got Greg Doyle here. You define it, Greg. What do you call it? Tech 248 is?
It's a network that's really about connectivity, connecting our tech companies. The second thing it's about is helping with talent attraction. And the third thing is helping to brand Oakland County as a tech hotspot.
And, of course, Rosemary Bear, our guest from the last segment, is going to be representing – well, she's trying to represent a large portion of Oakland County in Tech 248 country, right?
Great. So we should have a friend if she gets elected.
Yeah, well, you'd think, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. that district is like Hazel Park, that area up through Pontiac, and then it also includes – it goes north all the way to the county line. So it includes Oxford and Lake Orion and Independence Township too.
That's pretty much Oakland County, right?
That's a lot of Oakland County.
Yeah. Well, there's like 380,000 people in every state senate district, so they're pretty big. Yeah,
I didn't realize that big.
Yep.
And you have a guest who's been waiting very patiently, and he's even got a cold beer waiting for him out in the lobby. So we got to get through this.
If it goes
we're
well.
Standing between him and a beer.
Yeah. Yeah. He's anxious. I know. Yeah. So today, Sean, I'm so happy to be here to present Sean. Sean is from Pixo. He's the CEO of that company, and he was one of the early joiners of Tech 248, helped us with the focus groups and really defining what Tech 248 was going to be all about. So,
and Sean's last name is
Hurwitz.
Thank you. Yes, you missed that part. I was waiting for that. You know, but go ahead.
Yeah,
people don't know me as Sean yet.
This Sean from Pixo. You know,
it's like Beyonce. Know? It's just Sean.
Yeah, right? Like Madonna. You know,
that's so. It. You know, because I've known him as Sean for so long. I figure everybody else does.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. All right. So that's your new name. You're just Sean from Pixo.
I interviewed you for Glitter about a million years ago. And so, hey, how's it been going?
A long time ago. Yeah, nice to see you again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been like 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So, something like that.
So, Sean, you know, tell us, where is the company? And then, because we want to get into, what does the company do? Because there's some really cool things going on.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me. We actually started down here in Royal Oak like 9 years ago, Matt.
Oh, okay.
I think that's when you probably interviewed us.
Yep.
We ended up leaving Royal Oak for 5 years, and now we're back in downtown Royal Oak. So we love being in Oakland County. We love Royal Oak especially. Walked to restaurants.
Great bars. Huh?
Yeah. Good bars. You know, the type of employee that we have, very creative, developer-like, you know, likes to be in the area and be able to get out, get away from the desk, get away from banging the keyboard. Mm-hmm. So Royal Oak is a great place for us.
Do you got folks that actually walk to the office?
Or bike, maybe.
Or bike to the office?
You know, I think we did have somebody that biked, but I do not think we do right now.
Oh, okay.
Especially not coming up with the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, the weather.
You have to be pretty hardcore to bike in the winter in Michigan. So.
I vacationed in the Netherlands in August, and my friend's wife rides a bike. And I go, what does she do in the winter? And he goes, she rides the bike. Wow. It's amazing culture over there. I mean, bikes are everywhere, and everyone's all ages riding them. But we're digressing, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
You got someplace to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you use a bike or a car.
There you go.
So, Sean, you know, you were talking about how you love it at Royal Oak, you love Oakland County. What is it about this Southeast Michigan area that's great for tech?
Well, the location is definitely great for us. We have people that coming from different parts of Southeast Michigan, and this part of the state just seems to be very local for us. We also have a lot of like-minded companies that we work closely with and collaborate with, as well as talent. So we have close relationships with all the different schools in the area, and that makes it all great for us.
So building the pipeline.
Yes, sir.
That's great.
And clients, of course.
Now, if you could only link up with a college that did technology, you'd have everything. Really...
It had a really
oh, I'm sorry, that would be you, Matt, wouldn't it? So
really good computer science department, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've certainly had many conversations with Lawrence Tech, and we've taken interns from there.
Now, when you first started out, you were kind of an animation provider, but you've since expanded way beyond that. So tell me a little bit about what Pixo's up to these days.
We certainly have. Yeah, we always were in video games, but with the video gaming came animation as well. Mm-hmm. With a mobile explosion in the late 2009-2010 years, we caught wind of that, caught the sales really early. The evolution of virtual reality has put us in another pivot, and we're using our skill set, which is perfectly aligned for virtual reality. So today we develop enterprise virtual reality software, specifically training nowadays.
That's really, really big, right? And it's just going to explode over the next couple of years.
It's really starting to take off. You know, for those that don't know virtual reality, it's like being in your own video game, except we use it not just for entertainment, but we're using it for training and immersing people in a real lifelike world environment that otherwise couldn't be trained. So risky, high danger.
Dirty
areas.
Or whatever, you know, I mean.
I was looking at the website, and you had, like, first responder training.
Oh, yeah, that'd be one, you know, running into a fire. You don't really want to do that the first time, right?
So, yeah. Active shooter situation or something
shooter,
like that.
Active shooter, yes.
Yeah, so virtual reality allows you to immerse someone in that type of environment that otherwise wouldn't be possible. Yeah. That's risky, usually very expensive. And we've been able to develop software that allows you to do that.
Do you have any military clients?
We do not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. That's although our software would be very applicable there.
Yeah.
It's not an easy industry just to break into.
Sure. Well,
Greg and I know a lot of people that take them. I'll have to put in a good word for him, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say tank training, jet training.
Commanding
all
general,
stuff.
He wants to get on the show. I'll say, well, you get on the show. I want to match you up with Sean from Pixo.
There you go.
He has no last name. Just no. Sean from Pixo.
But he'll know him. See? Yeah. Right. He doesn't need a last name. He's like Madonna.
Yeah, I'll be famous now.
Yeah, AR. We were talking before you came on, and that would be the Pokemon Go experience, which, as we all said, 50 million users for about 90 days, and you know, so. Mm.
Yeah, the enterprise use of AR is still slow coming. Many experts believe that AR will eventually take over VR, but the hardware is just not quite there yet. We have our finger on that pulse, and we're watching it very closely, but until the hardware catches up.
Yeah, the headsets are still kind of clunky, right? That's, you know.
Well, we were just talking about that, too. Miami, I interviewed him. I can't think. You just mentioned his name earlier.
Doug McGeary.
Yeah, thank you. They're really developing the hardware now. And I was going to ask you, too, the other, I don't know if they're a competitor, but they're in Oakland County, Mackey Vision. Greg over there, that's just Greg from Mackey Vision. He doesn't use the last name either.
Yeah, I don't think they do virtual reality, though.
Well, they were doing some stuff for, like, Game of Thrones. They do a lot of stuff for all the TV ads. When you're looking at a car ad these days, that's not real. That's all computer-simulated stuff. I was amazed, you know?
Yes, some of our technology allows us to take those CAD models of whether it be cars or tanks or furniture or fire trucks and bring them into our virtual space very efficiently. Another area where VR is more efficient than typical training is we've developed a proprietary engine that allows multiple users to enter the same 3D environment at the same time. Mm. So collaborate on the training from any device anywhere in the world, which, as you might imagine, could save a tremendous amount of time and money.
Travel expense, yeah.
Yeah, right. A lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've heard of AR being used in certain retail settings, like for furniture, if you want to see what something would look like in your house, or, you know, a car, if you want to, you know, look at a car at a showroom and say, well, what would it look like in a different color? And you could put on a pair of glasses and the car will change color in front of you. So, you know, is coming eventually.
Well, that happens. There's these configurators that a lot of the car companies have that you can do that online, play around with that stuff.
Yeah, just not virtually.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Or in a virtual environment.
Well, yeah, it's just 2D. You're just looking at a screen, you know, so.
Yeah.
What do you see, Sean, as like the biggest challenge for your company right now?
Well, as we believe, timing is really everything. Timing to market, educating the clients, We've developed a platform robust enough to handle many clients, but the clients are just early adopters right now, learning the space. So educating prospects on virtual reality and how it would help. Talent is always exciting. We have a unique set of skill that we're looking for. So talent is another one that we're always looking for.
Yeah, and we hear that, boy, all the time, from our tech companies especially.
Well, because that's the question that Matt was going to ask anyway,
right? That's
right.
Are you hiring, and if so, for what skill sets? That's always my question when we have a company in.
Yeah, we are hiring. The unique skill that we're looking for right now is actually not that unique in the gaming world. So programmers that know how to develop on the Unreal or Epic game engine. The problem that we have is those developers want to develop games. So we have a more serious use of the technology, but it's still the same Unreal Engine. So getting the gamers with that skill set over to our side, the money-making side, the enterprise side, is challenging.
Hmm. Who do you see as the early adopters of this technology?
Well, simulation obviously has been around for a very long time, so that's not something that we're creating. This is just the technology that's evolving simulation and really reducing the barrier to entry. We're currently focused on first responders, the energy and the utility space. We're currently working on a gas meter inspection project for Peoples Gas in Illinois, as well as medical. I think medical is going to be the next big vertical to really take off. But we're, like I said, we're focused on training and then these particular spaces right now.
I just shot a bunch of video at the National Modeling and Simulation Coalition in September. And that was the big thing there. It was University of Nebraska is really big into medical training. The U of M has now gotten into that. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Do you want somebody to operate on you that's never operated before? Yeah. You know, so.
Right. So VR would be a great use case there.
Right. Sorry, I stepped
on you. I guess I was going to that place too. You know, when you look at the first responders to be able to get training in handling hazardous waste and all different types of things like that would be much better situation, wouldn't it?
Sure. And then, as you know, data today is big in everything. So being able to actually capture someone's behavior in the environment and see how it matches not only protocol, but how that person responds in a very high-risk situation. VR allows you to really create emotion, whether that's fear or empathy or happiness, joy, and you can really track that.
Wow. I guess, you know, you never think about that side of it as well. And so in your company, are you providing feedback to the client on the emotional side?
I wouldn't say the emotional side, more the response side and how they're reacting in that type of environment. So we could create fear, like we've recently developed a demo where we blew up a gas tanker and three different phases of the explosion. So you would imagine the user or the first responder having fear, and then we're tracking how they respond to that.
Wow,
that's cool. So I can see how valuable that would be in the training environment. And so there's no other way to measure that other than reality,
right?
You know,
it's got to be a first time for everything, right? Yeah. So, but you don't want to be the first time and the last time at the same time, right? Exactly.
Right. So that's the way to do it today.
Yeah,
is you may not come out of it.
Yes. All right. Now my nephew's a EMT, so he'd probably be real interested in that.
So what are the plans for expansion? You know, I'm only giving you about a minute.
You got about a minute to answer that question.
Okay. Well, we've implemented a very aggressive marketing plan, and we plan on taking this platform out nationally and then internationally.
Wow.
All right. Thanks very much for Greg Doyle from Tech 248. If people want more information about that, how do they get it, Greg?
Tech248.com.
And Sean Hurwitz, how about Pixo?
No, it's just Sean from Pixo.
Okay.
Don't Google that.
Okay.
www.pixovr.com.
Okay. Thanks very much to Tech248's Greg Doyle and his guest, Sean Hurwitz from Pixo. We'll be right back with our next segment in just a second. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launch pad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Roush.
And we're back for the last segment of M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network. And I have with me, now I have to put in a disclaimer here, Rick is one of my business partners, but we still love him.
Hopefully he still loves you if he's
Well, yeah, you know, you never know. You know,
like that's what you need to look at.
Touch and go, right? You know, so, but anyway, Rick is going to be talking about a new internet satellite service that I just found out about last week. And if you go to my website, you'll see the ads for it. You'll be able to get more information. But he's going to give you the really detailed backstory about, it's called, if I'm pronouncing it right, Exceed?
Yes, Exceed by Viasat.
Yeah.
And it's been around for a while. And, Exceed, I think, launched Viasat 1 in 2009. And they've been providing some service, albeit it's spotty nationwide, mm-hmm. with limited bandwidth capabilities, and primary residential mm-hmm. is what their target was. Well, they just launched Viasat 2 mm-hmm. in June of this year.
Got a nice video of it on the website.
Yep, yeah. It's really cool looking. And a whole lot of backstory there as well about everything that it does and why they're doing it. But first quarter of 2018, they're going to crank it up to 100 meg anywhere in the United States.
Wow.
It's wireless?
It is satellite wireless to wow. anywhere on the terrestrial Earth in North America.
We got to ask a few hard questions because the audience aren't here to do that. Now, I had DirecTV for a while. I know it's not the same thing.
Right.
But on cloudy days or nasty days, I didn't get TV. How does that avoid that situation with this particular stuff, this technology?
Well, apparently their technology is more advanced and sees through that stuff. I can't tell you specifically how.
Probably just more power or different frequency that's not
that's
as susceptible.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You're talking about streaming video versus streaming data. Of course, data is video, but I mean, it's a little different, right?
And Matt is exactly right when it comes to the power, mm-hmm. because Viasat 2 is double the power of what Viasat 1 right. was. And so they've cranked up the signal. And what we see it for is, you know, because we're a managed service provider, we provide outsourced IT services to small and medium businesses. And one of the things that we look at is redundant internet, right? Uh-huh. Everybody becomes more, what am I thinking of? You got to have internet. In other words, they're more reliant.
More dependent
and reliant on internet.
Because if you got fiber or you got twisted pair or cable or whatever, bad things can happen.
Yeah. Construction can cut it. You know, anything can happen there and does.
And then you're really dead if you don't have internet in this modern age, right?
Yeah. Oh, and one of the scenarios, I guess, that you could think about is if you are in an office building and all of the internet capability runs wired, that's all on one pole. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's all on one pole. So the truck comes by, takes down that pole. Nobody has internet anywhere in the area. All wireline internet is interrupted. Well, uh-huh. if you use your backup, the satellite is your backup. Now you've got a wireless backup. And the trade-off was too much for most people to accept in the past, where it was 15 meg was your max download speed.
And real problems with latency.
Yeah, a little bit. Yep. That's also been cut in half, if you will, over what it was before. But now 100
two-thirds of a second, right? To go to the satellite, bing, bing.
Yeah, everybody talks about latency, but it's comparative. You know, if you've got gigabit speed with your fiber or your coax, you know, you now look at it as, you know, instantaneous. Click, 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 it's there. And so when you would fail over to this experience, you certainly would notice it, but it's an acceptable risk, if you will, or liability or redundancy position, because it certainly is better than being without. And with
because I think geosynchronous orbit for a satellite is, what, 24,000 miles up or something like that. Yeah. So it would be basically the signal would have to go 50,000 miles to get there and back, which, you know, light's 186,000 miles a second. So you're looking at a third of a second. You know,
look
roughly.
At Matt do the math.
Yeah.
Well, he was always a math whiz, you know, so.
Yeah, communications major.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah. So,
but yeah, a third of a second is not bad. And you can tell, what I always tell is satellite TV news. Because you could tell some places where they've got kind of a crappy connection, there could be a really uncomfortable 2 or 3 second delay mm-hmm. in, you know, question and answer back and forth. Other times it seems like it is almost instantaneous. And I think it's probably how much satellite they're willing to pay for.
Yeah, CNN, you see that a lot. You see that a lot on CNN where they ask the question, there's like 1,001, 1,002. Yeah. And then the guy.
Darn speed of light anyway.
Right, yeah. Yeah, interesting. And then so for rural areas too, I mean, I know some people in this room that want to retire to Traverse City and maybe want to live beyond where the fiber is.
Yeah, if you live outside of town, the cable is hard to find.
Yeah,
right, right.
That's
yeah.
what I'm thinking, Northern
so
Michigan.
So this is absolutely the dream come true, so to speak, for mm-hmm. the people who want to live rural and still have access
See, Matt,
to the communication world.
You can be a world. Techno guy up
I
there
know,
after
Pick
all.
A spot, throw a dart at it, and I can put a dish in that spot and give you 100 meg.
How big's the dish?
That was my next question.
It's just like a DirecTV dish.
Okay,
it's,
so you know, pizza pie.
Eight,
pizza
yeah, 18 pie dish. Inches or yeah, something okay. like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And delivery is 3 to 5 days, which is another advantage to it. And then what we're also doing with it is managed Wi-Fi.
Hmm.
So think about things where you've got hurricanes mm-hmm. and natural catastrophes, and you have to have command centers of all kinds. Mm-hmm. You could drop this thing in the middle of it and attach a whole mesh of Wi-Fi and end up with a compound that's all lit up for everybody who's there for that purpose.
Thinking Puerto Rico could use that, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Agriculture, you know, Internet of Things, right?
Right.
Favorite topic
yes.
these days. So, Internet
we'll
of Things.
We're
going
sure we'll to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that shameless plug in a moment. So, just stand by. You know?
Okay.
So,
all right.
But, yeah, I mean, because if you got your watering, those huge watering devices they use on
yeah.
farms, something like that, I'm sure that's remotely controlled, right? I don't see the farmer
right.
out there pushing that thing around or anything, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and you need sensors to figure out how much water it needs
yep,
or doesn't need,
too.
Depending on
yep.
rainfall.
Yep. So, all yep. that stuff.
Yeah. So that would be an instance where we'd put a wireless mesh across that whole field and have the moisture sensors in the soil picking up the moisture and then relaying back to the cloud
mm-hmm.
and talking to the software. The software comes back down and sends a signal to the sprinkler system that says, hey, turn it on.
That's it.
You know. And turn it on with this volume of water, you know, even that level of stuff.
Yeah, it always cracks me up to see people's automatic sprinkler systems, you know, sprinkling away in a driving rainstorm. You know, it's like,
right.
dude, you don't need it. You're wasting money here.
Yeah, they were doing that in my apartment complex until just 2 weeks ago or so. You know, we're getting this deluge. I look out there and the sprinklers are going. I go, So.
Yeah, you know, there's all sorts of really cool stuff that's coming out with the Internet of Things, and this is a connectivity piece that's absolutely necessary for some of this stuff to happen in the underserved areas. So.
Okay, so we have to ask this question too: what's it cost?
Entry point is $99.
Okay,
with zero data on that plan, and it's $10 a gig because it's what we're asking people to look at it for is redundant internet.
Right,
you don't
not
need,
your primary.
Yeah, you
secondary.
Don't need redundant internet. And we're looking at it from a small and medium business perspective. So we're looking for economical solutions, but you can ratchet up into bigger price points with guaranteed data. So 50 gig in any given month is $169. You know.
It's reasonable for business. I mean, maybe
yeah.
the homeowner may not want to spend that kind of dough,
right.
But for a business, particularly – any business anymore is an internet business.
Yeah, and a homeowner doesn't really need 100 gig either.
No,
I'm sure there's probably step down there, or there will eventually be step down.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
levels of service.
Yeah.
So.
And the businesses are becoming obviously more relying on cloud based products, right? So your Office 365 and most of line of business applications now are cloudified, if you will. They're in somebody else's data center. You know, you're not putting big servers and data centers in businesses anymore. Ooh. And so the internet's essential. The only way you can get connected to those things and stay connected and productive is to have an always on internet experience.
Speaking of IoT, we weren't, but I'm gonna wedge
Boy,
that in.
That was a smooth transition.
You could have given me a high sign.
I'd have served you up a softball.
I wanted to do the segue thing, but I didn't hear it. You know, so we're just
yeah.
Gonna,
that segue crashed.
Yeah, but we got there. So, speaking of IoT,
yes,
Rick and I are working on this project for April Internet of Things show that we're calling. Oh, you're calling. Actually, somebody's phone's ringing.
The
bell. Okay, bell. Got it. Right, I'm sorry. Right. I told everybody to turn them damn phones down, you know?
All right,
so anyway, so yeah, IoT Tech Connect, that you came up with the name.
Yep.
I can't reveal who we're talking to, but we're talking to a lot of heavyweights. Good show. It's going to be at the Marriott in Troy.
April 4th,
and hopefully we'll get lots of folks involved. We're going to have autonomous vehicle stuff. We're going to have connected tech stuff.
Yep.
And we're going to have STEM education stuff and various other things. It's all kind of – I'm telling everybody we got to get it down by the end of the month because everyone's been dragging their feet about getting the content developed. But we're real close now, and I think it's going to be a good shoe.
Yeah.
And one of the things we want to do is invite a lot of high school and college kids there.
Startups. We want to see the startups
yes.
there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Give them exposure.
Yes. So it's different. And people go, wow, there's IoT shows around the country. And that may be the case. But this one will focus just
Michigan.
On Michigan. It's
right.
a Michigan-only show.
Yep.
What we're doing. And really, Southeast Michigan, you know.
Yeah.
Although we're not
well,
turning
you know,
anybody.
Come on down Traverse City.
Yeah.
You know, come
yeah,
on over Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids. But
it's really the heart of the arc there, the 10
right.
counties from Ann Arbor to, you know, up by Flint. Because you want to make it a drivable show. You can drive
right.
down. You don't have to get on an airplane and go somewhere.
But tell them about the video.
Oh, yes, of course. We're going to be shooting all the content and video. Because that's always been, you know, you go to these shows and they got the video there. They're putting it on the boards. And I go, what are you doing with it next? And they go, nothing. And I go, why? You know, I mentioned that to the Caleb from the government there when they did the cybersecurity show at Kobo. I said, you know, you got all this really, you got some killer speakers here, but if you're not at the show, that's it.
Right.
And he goes, yeah, it's probably a good idea. And I go, why is it people aren't thinking about this, right? So we thought about it. We thought about it. Okay.
All right.
So the content will be evergreen.
So those folks who attend, as well as the sponsors and exhibitors and anybody who participates in the show, are going to be able to access that video after the show. So, and the reason why that's important, even to the attendees, is because there's going to be multiple breakout sessions, right?
Three or four going simultaneously.
Right? Cybersecurity, autonomous vehicles,
all that
you know,
stuff.
Whatever we can come up with that just floats your boat, but you can't get to them all simultaneously.
Yep.
Yeah.
Unless they get that cloning technology down before April.
I
want to see four mats, you know? So what do you think?
Well, I'm just afraid my wife might like one of the other ones better than me. So we never know.
We could also do an Internet of Things camera and have you put it in each one of the sessions, you know, and record all of them simultaneously for yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, there's all sorts of possibilities. We're going to be working.
Or you might just miss a session because you get into networking. You know, you get in a really interesting conversation with somebody. You don't want to stop it, you know, just because the bell's ringing.
Of course, Matthew will be invited, and we're going to have this big VIP reception in the evening. And that's really, after all day of that stuff, a couple of toddies, you know, you get to network, get business cards. That's really what it's about, right?
Yeah, that VIP networking reception is going to go, what, from 6:30 to 8:30?
Or so.
That's going to be the who's who of IoT in Michigan. And so if you want to be seen and see who's involved, you know, you got to get there.
And then there's probably going to be, you know, afterwards parties and, you know, it's gonna be.
That sounds like trouble, Mike. I've been out with you.
Well, we'll get a little liquor together. Who knows what'll happen? You know.
Okay. Just make sure you have a room at the Marriott.
Yes.
So you don't have to drive
that's
anywhere.
A long drive back to Ann Arbor, right?
Yep.
Especially when, and I have this deal with the state police. I don't drink, they don't arrest me. So
Ooh, okay.
It's a good deal. You know, so.
Did you get that in writing?
Yes. I get a card from the governor. Get out of jail free. The first time, you know. No, I won't do that. We're hoping that governor will be there.
We're trying.
A longtime friend of mine, and this will be his last year in office.
Yeah, we knew him when he was a venture capital
just
guy.
Just a plain old venture capitalist.
In Ann Arbor, yeah.
And we're really trying to emphasize the Planet M, Planet M for Michigan. I can do it. Concept. And that's his baby, his legacy thing. So I remain optimistic. I went to his executive assistant, who I've known forever, and said, "We want the governor." And she said, "All right, well, I'll let you know."
Okay. So is there yet
I'll
a
get
website?
Back to you.
Yes. Yeah. The old "Don't call us, we'll call you."
So once again, the date is April 4th,
yes,
of 2018. Is there a website for this thing yet, or just sort of a placeholder?
There is a website.
Okay.
It's www.iottechconnect. iottechconnect.com.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank all of our guests here today. Rick Beckers of Cloud Tech One and IoT Tech Connect.
Yes.
Tech 248's Greg Doyle and his guest, Sean from Pixo.
Sean Hurwitz. You know.
It's Sean Hurwitz. But yeah. And before that, Kathleen Norton-Schock and her guest, Rosemary Bayer. And we kicked off the show with Paul Rutherford of EOSTAR. So, Mike, another good one.
It takes me longer than you think to put these shows together, but yeah, they come okay, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, until next week, folks, we will see you soon on the internet. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.